There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
NLT is not here. Sonal Rupani is here today. Now, we are joined by Ludmila Yamalova, who is back in the studio once again. Nice to see you. You were away last week.
I was, and wouldn't you like to know where I was?
That's exactly what I was going to ask, and clearly I'm not supposed to.
Conquering the world.
Were you really? Where did you conquer?
I failed miserably, and hence I'm back in the studio.
Oh, well, so second string, she's back on Dubai.
Another day, another try.
Well, look, it's nice to see you. So, look, three topics today, and we've been kind of building up to talking about the new media law, because it was announced, it's two and a half weeks ago now, isn't it?
Yes.
And I know you need to see the law, you need to see the actual wording. We do know that in some way or another, there is now licensing that applies to commercial activity if you are a social media influencer. The world is awash with people who believe they have influence on social media to varying degrees. Licensing it is probably a good thing. What do we know?
Indeed. And just to clarify, this is exactly what you said. The law here aims to regulate those who are not currently covered by the traditional media activities. And these are the traditional media companies, the broadcasting companies, the radio companies, the newspapers and magazines. So those companies are not subject to this law, and that is because they're already licensed, and sort of as part of their regulations, they're also licensed by the National Media Council. So they are explicitly excluded from this particular law. So this applies to everybody else. Now, who are these everybody else? And so in relevant terms, and for simplicity's sake, there are two categories. There are individuals that who use media, electronic media, to promote themselves for an there has to be a commercial element involved. So it has to be done against a fee. And that's sort of how the language is drafted. It says a commercial activity against a fee. And we'll come back to what that means.
Right.
So you have individuals, and then you also have companies that also use electronic media to promote their services and sell their products, but whose licenses are not necessarily explicitly or even implicitly inclusive of that particular activity. So, for example, you may have a consulting company. And we know there are a lot of consulting companies out there set up in different free zones. And by the way, this law explicitly also includes all companies that are based in the free zones. So this is a national law which applies to the UAE, and it explicitly there's a separate provision that that includes all the free zones. So we know there are a lot of companies that are set up, companies, legal entities set up in different free zones where, I mean, the usual activities is consulting, for example. But consulting does not in of itself, unless it's media consulting, for example, it does not entail or encompass the right to advertise or sell your services through electronic media. So those companies now as well will require to be licensed by the National Council. So you see you have the individuals, and you also have companies that already have a license, but the license they have is a different license. It's a commercial license. This is a media license. So this is a license in addition. So you may want to think about it as the third-party approval that you need from Media Council to also allow you to use your electronic media, be it website or any of the social media, to promote your services. So that's sort of in broad categories. Those are the two types of businesses, if you will, that are subject to this regulation. Mm. Now, businesses is an operative word because there has to be a commercial element involved. So let's say if you have just a personal blog, there's no commercial activity. And commercial activities, I mean, how would you normally generate money? Usually it's you sell your ad space. So if you don't do any of that, and it's a personal blog about your travels or about the books you read and such, and doesn't have any kind of money element behind it, those are not subject to this law. So, and as we all know, there are a lot of, to use your word, influencers out there who use Instagram, social media, LinkedIn, what have you, other websites, and not necessarily their individual websites, but more social media. And this law expressly includes social media. So when they're talking about electronic media, it includes social media, because you may not have your own website, but you have your Facebook page, Instagram page. And there are a lot of influencers out there who use the social media and generate money that way by usually selling ad space.
Okay, so if you have a platform from which you broadcast, be that through social media or just online, digitally, you are now accountable. You're held to account for that.
Indeed.
If it's commercial, if the activity is commercial.
Indeed, right. Yes. So what that means is that now you need to apply for the license from the National Council. And there are a number of requirements. And one interesting requirement is that you always have to now designate what's called an administrator or, I guess, manager. Mm. And that administrator has to be registered with the National Media Council. And that administrator is responsible for the content that is being published on social media and electronic media, which in many ways is a great great development if you think about it, because there are a lot of people out there that put out content that hasn't really been validated or is not necessarily accurate, and there aren't really any people to pinpoint to be responsible for that content. And as we know, anything that exists in electronic domain is very difficult to reverse. So once the word is out there, to erase that is almost impossible. So the idea here is to hold people more accountable to the content that's being provided. And if I may kind of just read the objective behind this law, because it's important, because I know that a lot of people who may be listening to this, they're thinking this is some kind of curtailment of I mean, obviously free speech sort of means something else in this part of the world, but there are a lot of people that may be thinking, oh, this is sort of taking away from the whole purpose of the internet. Mm. But it's not so, because if you actually read the objective, it's, you know, one is to enrich the publishing industry. Two is to enrich digital content. Three, ensure that religious, cultural, and social values of the state are respected, and that the freedom of opinion, expression, and constructive discourse are observed in the electronic media space. And then four, provide a balanced, responsible, and fair media content that respects the privacy of the individuals and protects the society from potentially negative effects. And if you think about these very phrases, they are very significant, because it's very true these days. It's very easy to put out whatever commentary without ever being held accountable, and the businesses and individuals on the receiving end often suffer the consequences when they actually had no say behind comments that are being published against them. Mm. So here now there's going to be a person that will be designated with the authority and who will be responsible. And by the way, to be an administrator, you have to have postgraduate qualifications, unless it's your own company or it's your own website. And then in that case, you still need to show appropriate academic qualifications to be providing content. So for example, let's say I want to comment on medical care in the UAE. So you have to provide to register for the license, to apply for the license, I have to show that my academic qualifications are appropriate to the content which I put out there for the social benefit. And you can see the tremendous value in that, because if I have no medical background, what credence do I have to comment?
Well, that's an automatic validation, isn't it, I suppose? Or you could argue that it's an automatic validation. It would be easy to understand that, take you, for example, as a legal practitioner, as a qualified lawyer, there's no reason why you couldn't blog about legal matters. That is pretty easy to understand. Logical.
Indeed, but you will be surprised, and this kind of links in indirectly to the other story we talked about, the financial advisors. And I've been following this space in my professional capacity for several years, because there have been over the years lots and lots of these financial service advisors. Mm. And if you read the website, it's just, and it all sounds very rosy and very promising, but if you actually drill down in the qualifications of each one of these so-called advisors, they have zero qualifications. And this is based on some my personal experience investigating some of this for on behalf of our clients. But they actually have zero qualifications. And that kind of relates back to that story we were going to cover last 2 weeks ago. Same mm-hmm. sort of thing, that the people who sell the services, financial services, they may not have any ill intent, but if they have no financial qualifications, no investment experience, should they be allowed to do this?
It's a very good point, and it's another topic we're going to get to. We're going to come back to this as well, the new media law, its applicability and relevant conclusions. If you have a question for Ludmilla, 4001 via the free app, not just about the new media law or about licensed or unlicensed financial advisors, your experiences thereof. We're also going to be talking about liquidating, closing down companies. But if you have anything legal on your mind, those numbers, that's where to send details through. You can call us, 43 1010. Ludmila Yamalova is here.
Drive Live Talks Legal.
And we're talking about the new media law, how it applies, who it affects. If you're a social media influencer involved in commercial activity, it very much affects you. Ludmila is here to outline that. So let me ask you this from Brian, Ludmila. If I have an Instagram account, because I have a lot of followers, restaurants give me a voucher to eat there and to review, say what I think. Do I need a license to do that?
Great question. So I would argue from a legal perspective, yes. Even though the language is going back to the language of the law, it says on a commercial basis against a fee. Now, a fee, obviously, it's subject to interpretation. Vouchers is also has commercial value to it. So I would say a voucher can also be considered as a fee. So I would say, yes, that activity also would need to ultimately be covered, because the idea is it's a type of advertising.
Mm, okay. Gilbert's here. I own a sports company that regularly advertises on social media. Does this mean I need to apply for this license on top of my existing trade license?
That's our reading of the law. That's the other category. It's companies out there that actually have a commercial license to operate already, but whose license, the activities that are embodied in that license, do not cover electronic media activities. And based on what Gilbert just said, sounds like your sports company would not. So you would need to also get the license.
Okay. So what else do we need to know?
Yeah. So some of the other admin things, it's the license is issued for 1 year, but it can also be for 3 years, maximum, as long as all the fees are paid up front. And then the application, the council is supposed to respond within 30 days. So that's sort of the timeline. And then there is a provision to submit grievances if you're being denied a license. Also, the license is personal to the individual who applies for it. So, for example, let's say if I have my own license, I cannot transfer to Sonal or Tim. So it is personal to the individual who applies for it, which I think is quite interesting. And that makes sense logically, because it does relate to your qualifications. And also, it includes potential requirement of third-party approval. So, for example, if I provide commentary, legal commentary. Right. So for me as a lawyer, I also need the ruler's court approval to practice as a lawyer. So that's called a third-party approval. Same thing if you are, let's say, an accountant of sorts or some kind of other medical advisor. So you always need a third-party approval, or insurance, or recruiter. So just because you are selling your services through the media, through the online media, does not mean that you don't need to get those third-party approvals. You also need them as well.
All right, let's talk to Guy, who is on line 5, I think. Guy, what did you want to ask Ludmila?
Hi, guys. I had a question regarding the new-ish sort of legislation regarding part-time work permits. Okay. for people. Again, I was trying to find some sort of detailed information about it, but it seemed to me, the last thing I heard was that employees didn't need an NOC from their existing employer to go out and find a part-time job. That's kind of the major change. Now, my worry is that as an employer, if my guys all go and get part-time jobs working in the evenings and then show up to work for me, absolutely exhausted and don't kind of work to their full capacity, kind of how does that play out? Have I been misinformed regarding the obligations regarding the NOCs?
It's an understandable worry, Ludmila.
It's a great question. And Brian, is that your name?
Guy.
I'm sorry, Guy. Because I had the very same discussion this morning with my team, and I expressed the very same concerns. Because you're right, the major difference in this new regulation is the waiver of the requirement to receive an NOC from your sponsor, i.e. the employer, to mm-hmm. work part-time. So what does that mean for an employer? And that is that, obviously, if you're employing your staff on a full-time basis, the only time they have to work part-time is evenings and weekends. And so, yes, now they do not need your approval, your sign-off to do that on those hours. And my question with my team was, well, what about the liability? What other sort of liabilities can still stick with the sponsor or the employer when that person goes and works in sort of off hours and on weekend? And to be honest with you, in practical terms, there are no other liabilities, because at this point you've already given them insurance, health insurance, because it's part of the requirement. They already have, you're paying them salary. They are not performing duties for you. So therefore, really, in practical terms, you're not responsible for anything. So let's say if they were to commit a crime or have an accident, husband, but it's not during the work hours and in the performance of their duties, then ultimately you will not be responsible. Though there could be some nuances in the interim where you will be involved only by virtue of the fact that you're the main sponsor. But fast forward, and sort of in substance, you will not be held responsible for anything else. Now, so the only really liability that you're facing, as you rightfully pointed out, is more the performance of your employees because of now being overextended. And it certainly is a very reasonable concern. The only recourse there that you have is if their performance, if you can see this on their performance, then you just need to be very careful and document the decline in their performance, and so that then ultimately you will be able to terminate them, let's say under Article 120 for not performing their duties. But you know, Article 120 is pretty severe in terms of deprivation of other employment benefits to the employer, and therefore there's a pretty strict requirement of notice. And so as long as you're keeping documentation and the employees are being notified and given time to sort of pick up their game, and you'll be very, very specific about that. Let's say, listen, you haven't been showing up timely, and so this is your 2-week notice. After that 2-week notice, if you don't pick up your game, then you will be subject to, let's say, termination under Article 120. So really, in practical terms, that's the only thing you can do, is that you can just monitor their performance and just be
would they be obligated to inform me that they have a part-time job?
Well, that's interesting, and that goes back to this NOC. No. In short, the law does not require to do so, and because there's no requirement for the NOC, and there's no requirement to even let you know. So you just kind of need to be on the lookout and just be prepared to have documentation to serve them. It's not obviously the best thing for an employer, but one of, we were sort of discussing as a team why this law was introduced, and it's perhaps, for example, with VAT. So now a lot of businesses these days will need to hire accountants and auditors, or I guess less auditors but accountants. Before they didn't really, but they don't need full time. They need a few hours a week on the weekly basis, on a monthly basis, what have you. So perhaps this law now allows all these other professionals to, and by the way, it only applies to certain kind of professionals. So you have to have at least a college degree. So you cannot be, for example, I mean, because we use an example of a personal trainer. Mm-hmm. And so, but there is a requirement of college degree or some sort of higher education. I guess if there are a lot of professionals out there that, and businesses could benefit from them on the temporary basis, and certainly adds that flexibility to businesses and employees. But from your perspective as an employer, there's always that question mark about, you know, how that's going to affect their performance during the working hours for you.
Guy, have you had employees broach this with you? Have you broached this with employees that you have?
Not yet. I'm just trying to get ahead of the curve on it, really, because, I mean, the hours that my guys work, they will kind of finish sort of mid-afternoon, but they start fairly early in the morning sometimes.
Right.
So if they have been working in other sort of hospitality ventures in the evenings, then that doesn't give them kind of a full night's sleep to then show up and be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for the hospitality industry.
Maybe the positive or side for you to consider is that not everybody will qualify. So if it's hospitality, and I'm making an assumption that maybe those employees don't always have a degree, a college degree, a university degree, so then they would not qualify. So it really more applies to professionals.
All right, Guy, I appreciate your question. Does that help you at all?
Thank you very much, guys. Yeah, very, really helpful. Thank you.
Good to talk to you. That's Guy. It's interesting that, though, isn't it? That it is a case of, you can do this. I could go off in theory and just say, well, I'm going to become a night porter or a night watchman. I think I'd be a good night watchman. I'd be good at sitting and staring at screens.
Maybe scary looking, yeah.
Quite scary looking, thanks. But in theory, I could do that. And that would obviously leave me pretty exhausted for the next day, worse than already. But there's nothing to stop my employer from me doing that. That's the thing, isn't it?
I know. So we'll see how it plays out. There could be some other regulations and qualifiers, I think another option is that, let's say if somebody is hired, and this is now there's a possibility to hire somebody on the part-time basis. So what Guy was talking about is when somebody is already hired here on a full-time basis, and how that affects them. But now this option will allow somebody, a company, a sponsor, to hire somebody on the part-time basis. And then obviously then that that concern does not exist to the same degree in that case.
Okay, let's go back to the text line. Who have we got here? Changing the subject, actually, what's the minimum liability of a company legally with regards to notice period and gratuity, regardless of what the employment contract states?
Okay, so there's notice and there's gratuity. The statutory minimum notice period is 1 month. So if, and that's irrespective of whether there is a mention of that in the contract or offer letter or anywhere else. So that does not need to be stated. By law, you're guaranteed at least 1 month notice. However, contracts often provide for a longer notice, and that is possible. So we've seen anywhere up to 6 months, though over the last several years, there have been, they've been cut down more to the 3 months. It's more of a reasonable notice these days. So it's whatever contractually agreed, anything above 1 month. So that's as far as the notice is concerned. Gratuity, it depends on a number of factors. A, the length of the employment. So the gratuity really kicks in after 1 year of service, of continuous service. And then two, it depends on whether the contract is limited or unlimited, whether you're being terminated or you're resigning, and then how many years into your employment you're, for example, resigning. So let's say normally if you've served at least a year and you're being terminated, then it's 21 days for every year of service for the first 5 years. But if you are resigning anywhere between year one and three, then it's only 7 days per year, not 21. So it's 1/3 of your gratuity. If you're resigning between year 3 and 5, it's 2/3 of your gratuity, which is 14 days a year. Now, after 5 years, it doesn't matter whether you resign or being terminated. It's 30 days per year after the fifth year, starting from the fifth year for every year of service. So that's sort of the statutory gratuity.
All right, then.
And that's based on a basic salary.
The main topic today, the new media law, how it affects people who influence on social media commercially. Last one. If I own a company and we promote through our own company's social media accounts, the brands that are represented by us, do we still need a media license?
Yes. According to our reading of the law, that's the second category of businesses that are already incorporated and have a license, but whose license does not include media, electronic media activities, which based on what you've just described, and also anytime there's sort of advertisement involved that requires the media license.
Okay. How do you get a license, by the way? Where do you get the license from?
National Media Council.
It's just straight to the National Media Council.
You apply to them, mm-hmm. Yes, and that's within 30 days you're supposed to hear back from them and their application, their forms to fill out, information to provide, and within 30 days you're in theory supposed to hear.
And there is a cost to that, do you know?
Yes, I do know. There are costs depending on the type of license you provide,
right.
And so one of the kind of the general license, which involves websites and electronic accounts, including specialized sites, advertising, which is what I think our listener, I cannot see his name right now, Ari asked. So expressly includes specialized sites that use advertising. That's 15,000 dirhams to apply, and same fee, 15,000 to renew. 15,000 a year. Now, if it's a website and accounts of trading, offering, and selling of audio materials, I think it's a podcast perhaps, mm-hmm. That's 4,000 to apply and 2,000 to renew. Every year. Now, websites and accounts of trading, offering, and selling visual materials, 6,000 to apply, 3,000 to renew. Websites and accounts of e-publishing and on-demand printing, 3,500 to apply and 3,500 to renew. And then selling of books, 1,000 to apply and then 500 to renew. Newspapers and magazines, 1,000 to apply, 500 to renew. And sale of electronic video games, 8,000 to apply, 4,000 to renew.
Okay, so if you're using multiple channels, I guess a lot of Instagram story people are also YouTubers, for example, would also broadcast similar videos on Facebook. So you've got multiple channels there, but it is one license across multiple channels. Do we know that?
So you could. So let's say if you get the websites and electronic accounts, these are the general license, then perhaps, I mean, at least in theory, you should be able, if you just pay 15,000, then that will encompass it all. But if you just do audio or visual, then you have an option to just opt for one or the other, and the fees are different.
Okay. All right, then. Is there anything else in there that we should know?
Well, in terms of punishment, and so this is... it's the punishment here is really, this is commercial, right? So it's just fines. So let's say if you are promoting, you're doing activities without having a license, there will be a fine that will be imposed. But the law clearly provides that this particular punishment is in addition to any other recourse that exists under the law. And in many ways, let's say if you are being charged for providing misleading information, it could be criminal. So then you could be subject to criminal laws, or if you could be subject to civil laws if you've provided certain information about a business who suffered because of your commentary, then you could bring a civil case for compensation for those damages you've suffered. So basically, it's this particular monetary fine is in addition to any other actions that could be brought against either criminal or civil law.
Okay.
So pretty all-encompassing.
It is. I mean, it really is. The new media law. We've got Eileen on line 6. Let's talk to Eileen. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, how are you?
Good to have you on. You wanted
Thank
to talk
you.
About licenses for bloggers, is that right?
That's right, especially for beauty and fashion, because I'm not sure what kind of licensing. I can see that for financial advisors and perhaps for healthcare, you can get like qualifications in that way. But in fashion and beauty, you are, if you have any kind of license, and I'm not talking like a hairstylist, it's rare. And if you get paid in a cream to test out so that you can talk about it, that's not really paying, and that would in no way be able to pay for a media license. So, you know, how do you go about those types of, because I know there's a lot of people that, you know, read those kinds of blogs. I know that there are influencers, but you really never make any money to be, I mean, very rarely you make money to be paying these kinds of licenses yearly.
It's a good point. It's a fair point.
It's a great point. Unfortunately, this particular law, it sort of does not distinguish, does it? Well, it does not really aim to sort of differentiate between businesses, because the idea here is just how do you protect society. So whether you make 15,000 dirhams a year or 1.5 million dirhams, it's, you know, the damage potentially that your commentary could be make could cause other businesses or third parties. I mean, that's really what this law aims to protect. It's the sort of the recipients or, you know, the people on the other side, and it's less about how much money you make, and if you make enough money, then you should be paying for the licenses. So I understand your concern. It's a real business and practical concern.
Because it's for artists. It's how artists express themselves, and you know, I'm a beauty expert. I have a blog, a fashion and beauty blog, and I've been, you know, in beauty as a professional makeup artist and in working in different kinds of capacities for 20 years. So, I mean, that more than qualifies me to be in a position to speak about it. However, there are no licenses in the UAE for that, or like, not licenses, I'm sorry, I guess qualifications.
Right. So on that, on the issue of qualifications, let me comment on that. There is a provision.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find it in the law, but I can't find the exact place. But there is a provision that unless the council basically waives the requirement. So it sounds like from the law itself, there would be certain expertise where they will require qualifications, and others where that requirement can be shown in other ways. For example, by just virtue of your experience. So you don't always have to show. Let's say if you're a food writer. I mean, how are you going to show that you know
exactly.
about food? So there it's more about experience. So in certain, it seems that it only with regards to certain kind of expert opinion, certain qualifications will be required to kind of comport with the content of your commentary. Otherwise, there are other ways of proving that you're competent to comment on this. So that's
right,
with regards
so I would
to qualifications.
I would have to get a license. I would have to pay 15,000 dirham a year, at least. I don't know what the price is, but to make my opinion known.
If there is a commercial aspect behind it, and it says if...
Well, they give me a cream to test so I can, you know, or lipstick.
Sure.
Like,
so I'll just, all I can tell you right now is the law says on the commercial basis against a fee. Now, that's where the sort of the question of interpretation will come in, and that is receiving products.
Right.
Does that qualify as a fee? And this is really subject to interpretation. So to be honest with you, in practical terms, when will the authorities actually really want to enforce this? It's really, I guess, in cases where sort of it's worth enforcing. But as the law is drafted right now, it could, your receiving products that have commercial value could also be considered a fee.
Eileen, we'll have to leave it there.
Okay.
But what's your blog?
Thank you. It's eileenedit.com.
All right. Well, there's a little plug for you. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that's Eileen. Let's go to, let me see, line 7. Is it Toray, I think, on the line? Laura.
Yes.
Touré.
Yes.
How are you, Touré?
Great, thank you. So I have a quick question for Ludmilla. So basically, I started an online business. How does it work in terms of filing the taxes? What is the process for that? Is it on a quarterly basis? Yeah.
For value-added tax, in other words, VAT.
Yes.
Well, so first of all, you have to be over the threshold of 360 or 70,000 dirhams. So if you fall below it, then you're not required to register. You can register. There's an optional registration if you make at least 100, and that's revenue, not profit, of at least 150 or 60,000. So then you have an option to register. And why you'd want to do that is that if you wanted to offset some of the taxes that you pay, then you would want to register. But basically, you would have to. But if you're below 150, then you don't need to register with FTA. So you don't really need to worry about it. But if you are above that threshold, and in particular the mandatory threshold, then you need to go through the FTA, which is the Federal Tax Authority. And so you need to set up a login with them. You have to open an account and you have to register with them. You have your own portal, and it's through that portal that you manage everything. But first you have to apply, you have to submit your license, and you have to have an account set up, and that will be your kind of, you will be centralized sort of repository of information and communication with FTA.
Okay, but then how can I tell? Because, like, for example, since I'm starting, maybe it might be slow, but then might later boom at a later stage.
Sure. Okay, with that regards, yes. So basically, the way the law is drafted is that you should, if you estimate, if you think you will be above 360,000, then you should register, if you think. Okay, so that's mandatory. Okay. Anything below is optional. So if you think you're going to be over 300, let's say 70,000, just to be safe, then you should register. Or at some point in time, if anywhere along the year in your business, mm-hmm. you start seeing that your revenues are going up, then that basically at that point you should apply.
So right, with the tax man, it's always best to be honest. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Good to hear from you.
Pleasure.
That's all we've got the time for on Drive Live Talks Legal today. We didn't get to unlicensed financial advisors or even licensed financial advisors this time. We'll come back and I think we'll do a whole week on that next Monday on this programme. Ludmilla Varlava, put you on the spot a million times and you always rise to the challenge. Nice to see you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.